everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church, and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects with the questions and issues of everyday life, and today we're talking about the Enneagram. Is it helpful or harmful?
Well, what is it, Bethany?
I'm going to say helpful.
Or harmful. Hey, it's from the email, though. Why don't you read this very good email that someone sent us that put this question on the table.
Yeah, so we got an email from a listener, and they said, "Did you catch these articles on the Gospel Coalition website? Seems like a lot of convos abuzz at Coram Deo about the Enneagram, even leaders getting trained in using it at our church. Can you chat with us on the podcast about your commendation of the Enneagram and your criticisms and cautions?"
Yeah, we can. We're going
to
do that
to.
Right now
Love
during
to.
This podcast.
Since you asked.
Thanks for asking. There were two articles linked in this email from the Gospel Coalition website. One is titled FAQ, What Christians Should Know About the Enneagram. And then the second one is Enneagram, The Road Back to You or to Somewhere Else. And so look, there's been lots of here's what happened. In the last, 18 months, all of a sudden, everybody is talking about the Enneagram. It's everywhere, and all of a sudden, it's like this huge thing. And I hate that because Coram Deo got interested in it before it was this huge thing, and now it's just like, oh, yeah, you guys are just jumping on the bandwagon of the Enneagram. Actually, so let us do two things. Let us tell the backstory of where we got connected and interested in the Enneagram. Then let us sort of talk about some of the critiques of it that are good and honest and helpful. And let us answer the question, why are we going to argue the Enneagram is helpful, all right? We, Dusty, what's it been, 4 years ago, started working with Rich Plass and Jim Cofield at Cross Point Ministries out of Louisville, Kentucky. These are two wise, older, seasoned pastors to the pastors kind of guys.
Sages, you might say.
Sages. They basically invest their lives in helping pastors and ministry leaders be and remain healthy. And they coached Pastor Justin on sabbatical a few years ago, and he brought them in, and they spent some time with our whole team. And they were the ones that introduced us to Enneagram. They've been using it for like 15 years as a tool for self-awareness. And at that time in our church, we had sort of, we were like Myers-Briggs people. We really liked the Myers-Briggs for a while. And Myers-Briggs has some limitations and weaknesses, and we just decided, you know what, if these two guys really like the Enneagram and we're using them as sort of to invest in some of our pastors and leaders, let's just use that tool instead. And so we sort of have gradually shifted over to the Enneagram. And then 2 years ago now, I guess we made it a big priority all year to try to take 100 of our leaders through the Enneagram. We sent you and Justin out to get trained in how to administer and talk about the Enneagram. What was that like?
You got
hands laid on you by Russ and Jim.
We got knighted into the Enneagram world. It was super fascinating and just learning how to read it. So the Enneagram talks about 9 main types, but you're also focused in the training on all 27 numbers. So super insightful, really helpful. But yeah, as you mentioned, we took about 100 people through it, which for us is a big commitment.
Yeah, it's a big commitment.
We don't usually do.
We sold out, man.
Yeah.
We went all in with the Enneagram.
And anytime we do that, you know it's a big deal.
Well, yeah,
we don't do that very
like
often.
Contrarian. We don't sell out to anything. But we just decided, you know what? Here's the thing. At Coram Deo Church, we have sort of 8 markers of spiritual, well, I don't know what you call it, maturity or growing discipleship. And the number one marker is self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on Romans 12:3, where it says, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought, but think of yourself according to sober judgment. And we just felt like we got a lot of young leaders who are low in self-awareness, and part of our desire is to help people become self-aware, and the Enneagram is a great tool for that.
Super helpful tool, because it doesn't just tell you what you are, like Myers-Briggs might do, or StrengthsFinders. But the freaky thing about the Enneagram is it tells you why you might be what you are.
It also is weirdly connected to virtue and vice.
Mm. Like that's where it gets creepy.
Yeah, it says like, hey, here's a virtue you probably uniquely have capacity to display, and here's a vice that probably trips you up a lot. And that was really helpful to me. Now, here's the backstory on the Enneagram. It has weird origins.
Yeah.
I'm not going to kid you.
Yeah.
So I was out at I was on a day of solitude out at the St. Benedict Center hanging out with the monks, and the library at the St. Benedict Center is a cool library because they just have books that you don't find anywhere else. It's all these, you know, old Catholic books and just, I mean, stuff that's very connected to spiritual formation and soul care and you know, monasticism and all this stuff. So I pulled this book off the shelf on the Enneagram. I was like, oh, there's a book here on the Enneagram from like 1982 or something. It was an old book. And I was like, wow, this is fascinating. And I start reading the first chapter, and it's basically like, because the first people to use the Enneagram were sort of in the Catholic mystical spirituality tradition. So some priests and Catholic spiritual directors who started using this tool back in the 1970s. And where they got it from was a Chilean psychologist slash mystic who probably is involved in the occult.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's at least New Age weird and probably like maybe into some occult stuff. So when you know that that's sort of where the Enneagram came from, and look, the Catholic doctors did a good job trying to say, oh, the early church used the Enneagram, but that's actually more myth than fact. No one's ever been able to find up, oh, yeah, actually Origen, the church father, was using the Enneagram. That might be true. This might have ancient roots in ancient history, but as we use it, it comes to us from this South American New Agey guru. And so for that reason, lots of Christians are like, it's kind of weird. I don't know how I should feel about that, Chris. And so I came back from that solitude retreat, and I grabbed Gary Nebker, and I said, hey, Nebs, these guys say this is like New Age creepy. What do you think about that? And he just smiled his Gary Nebker smile, and he said, brother, I'm a Calvinist, and we believe in common grace. That's what he said.
That's right.
So
that's good.
So this is why, you know, there's some evangelicals who are sensitive about the Enneagram because they feel like, oh, it has these weird New Agey backgrounds. But, you know, I would just say I actually do have a really big category for common grace. And I would just say the fact that spiritually odd or spiritually misguided people have used a tool like this doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad tool. We're not worshiping Satan with it. We're trying to grow in self-awareness with it. And it works for that. It's good for that. What do you guys think? Am I off?
We're trying to eat the meat and spit out the bones.
Bob, I share with you a big view of common grace. And I think the way that I view this, almost kind of like yoga, if I can use that analogy.
That's a good analogy, actually. I mean, because isn't yoga weird, New Agey?
Yeah, supposedly yoga, all the poses and the posturing has some kind of spiritual
Buddhist
significance way back
I
in the day
knew you
or
were
whatever.
A Buddhist.
But it's also great physical. A great physical workout. If you've ever tried yoga, it will kick your rear end.
So let's get all the cards on the table. Do you do yoga often?
No. Hey, my only version of yoga that I've done is when I was doing P90X back in the day.
Wow. And that's hard.
That is hard yoga.
That's hard yoga.
That will get you in shape.
I didn't even know that was the same thing.
So there is a, you know, devoid of any of the, you know, funky spiritual aspects, yoga can be a good physical workout. And so I've taken the Enneagram, and it was, you know, to be honest, if you never told me that it was some had these mystical roots, other than the symbol that's like on all the books, I would never have suspected that it had some kind of weird, funky, mystical roots.
Right.
Because
yep.
they ask you a bunch of questions about kind of what you're motivated by and how you make decisions and certain skill sets, and they put it in their little algorithm or whatever, and then boom, here's what you are, here's how you're wired, and then it's freaky accurate.
It reads your mail.
It really does. It reads your mail, and so and to kind of piggyback off what you said too, Bob, as far as what I found helpful about it, is it talks about what is a sanctified version of you look like versus an unsanctified version. That's super helpful. So I don't know. I read all this stuff and it's like, okay, that's the roots of it, but I don't know. It's yoga to me.
Amen.
It's yoga. It's all yoga.
It's all yoga to me. Hey, it's a tool. And like any tool, here's the danger. Here's a criticism. The writer who wrote in asked, what are your criticisms and cautions? It's the same as anything. It's a tool. Don't let it become the gospel, right? Like people do this. People
preach.
Do this with anything. Any personality test, any way of categorizing people can become this club that we beat people with or this overriding way that we sort of fit everything into. And at that point, it becomes unhelpful. So I'm with you, Chris. The Enneagram has been really helpful for me for self-awareness. And I feel like, man, it's helped me see some things about myself that I did not see and couldn't sort of put language on. It's been really helpful. I'm never going to hold it with the same regard that I hold universal objective truths. I'm just going to say it's a tool. And you know what? If I throw it out next year and decide to use another tool, great. But the Enneagram at this season in our church it has been a really helpful tool and has done some things uniquely that other personality sort of profiles have not done as well.
And as you mentioned earlier, the self-awareness value is key, and the Enneagram helps bring about self-awareness, particularly into your story. Meaning, what I mean by that is, it doesn't just say like, oh man, you must be an INTJ, which maybe you are, maybe you're not, but it actually goes a layer deeper to say, here's how you, like, you might be an eight, and the eight is the challenger or the achiever, and here's why you might be that way. You most likely grew up this way, or you didn't, but it's going to give you the option to get a little bit layer into another layer into your story, which then, if you're a mature Christian, you're going to lay the gospel over that and go, yeah, here's how Jesus redeems that. Here's where Jesus challenges that. Here's where scripture is applicable to that. And here's what God's calling me into as he sanctifies me into, dare I say it, like the best version of myself, the holiest version of myself.
Which actually is what you're called to become. That was a helpful thing. Someone told me decades ago, hey, your goal is not to grow up to be like Jesus. Your goal is to grow up to be like you, like a fully sanctified version of you. Because the shorthand I always grew up with was like, the goal is Christ-likeness, is being like Jesus. And that's actually not the goal, because you're unique, right? And just like Jesus was a unique human being. And so the goal of sanctification is to grow up into a sanctified, fully Christ-like version of yourself. But you still have a story, and you still have parental, you know, certain DNA running through your blood, and you have a certain history, and that's all made you who you are. And so there's part of that you need to sort of learn to settle into. And what does it mean to be a sanctified and Christ-like version of who I am, not who Chris is or who Dusty is?
And that's a helpful tool for discipling people too, because a lot of times we can get wrapped around the axle about, I have to be like this person in order to be a leader, order to be godly. And so to be able to help someone process, like, hey, this is who God has made you, and this is what a sanctified version of you looks like. So working with leaders, I've found this has given us good language and categories as well. I mean, we haven't used it as extensively as you have at Cormdale, but our staff has done it. Paul and I have done it. Our wives and a few other people have done it. So you're
more into yoga than you are to Enneagram.
Yes, we spend much more time at yoga at First City. We have a whole yoga gospel community.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I mean, the categories for helping leaders, discipling other people, especially those that you're going to find struggle with being comfortable in their own skin, so to speak, I think this is another way that can be pretty helpful.
Let's go quickly. What are some of the dumb things you see people do with the Enneagram? Like, here's one of the dumb things I see is like, this historical figure was a five. Just like, you don't know that. He's been dead for 40 years.
Right.
Shut up.
Yeah, there's that. Here's where I think it can get dumb, if you want, or where it can just actually paralyze you, is when it just starts to define you way more than the gospel would define you. So, in other words, you learn who you are based on
like,
the Enneagram.
Man, I'm an eight, and so this is just who I am, Dusty.
So you're an eight, so therefore
get used to it.
We can't ask you to do anything else.
Yeah, don't ask me to be something else.
So you only get to start stuff, and then you get to walk away and be angry.
And
apparently,
be angry.
According to the Enneagram, which you know that's a great life if you have license to do that, but that's obviously not healthy. So, I think depending again on the certain types, depending on what nine type you might be. Or which of the nine types you might be, rather, the way you read the Enneagram changes as well. So
I just
it can
realized,
paralyze you.
You got any? What's the dumbest thing you see?
Ranking them.
Yes.
Like which numbers?
Yeah. Which is better? I mean, and this, I'm a nine, and I sit on top of.
Wow.
You know, Bethany's a nine too.
Wow.
We sit on top and just.
You sit on top of the cult.
And just
basically.
Synthesize it all.
Yeah.
I just realized that the people who have no idea what the Enneagram is are really frustrated because we're 15 minutes into a podcast and we haven't even told them what we're talking about. We're just assuming, oh, you guys all know what the Enneagram is.
Come on. If you don't know, open your web browser.
Seriously,
you know,
get on the Gospel Coalition website. Okay, so very simply, the Enneagram is a, you've probably picked this up from the context of the conversation, but it is a personality / temperament tool that uses nine numbers, the numbers 1 through 9, as a way of classifying and categorizing various types of people, the wiring that you have or the way that you see the world or whatever. So, sorry, we probably should have made that clear. What are some other dumb things you see people do with the, or unhelpful things you see people do with the Enneagram? I've listened to like some Enneagram podcast. Like, again, there are like Enneagram podcasts out there. There are people who like are making their livelihood talking
straight
about
up.
The Enneagram. And I've listened to some of those, and it was dumb. Like, it was, it became like sort of like real self-helpy, like just yep. just a different version of like your best life now. Like, just, hey, you know, you just need to learn to live into, like, it just got so weird.
Yep.
Where there was no gospel lens to it, and really even no like common sense of like, you know, this is a tool. It was just sort of like, well, Dusty, since you're a six, then here's exactly what you need to sort of, here's how this has helped me sort of understand my whole life in light of how I, and I just, I'm like, it probably can't help you understand everything about life and the universe and everything.
Yep.
Well, are there, other than Plass and Cofield, are there really any other teachers out there that sort of use this with a good gospel lens? Because it seems like it's, for most, it's either Catholic mysticism or maybe even more liberal Christianity.
Yes. Yep. Those are the two streams that I would say,
So, I have not found them.
Yeah. So that's what's interesting is even the reason Kevin DeYoung wrote this article, The Road Back to You or to Somewhere Else, is because one of the most popular books that's come out in the last couple of years is called The Road Back to You. It's by Ian Cron and Susan Stabile. And they are both sort of, they fall in that sort of liberal Christianity camp. Like, they don't have a very good gospel lens, and the book is really frustrating because it sort of is just, it becomes very self-helpy, and they use enough Christian language that for sort of a non-critical reader, it can sort of feel like, oh, this is just a good, helpful book on the Enneagram. But, and it is in some ways. Like, I read it, and it helped me sort of build out my understanding of the Enneagram, but there are just some real weaknesses to how they talk about it. So, yeah, I would say the reason we want to sort of like be very precise about how we use it is because I do feel like Plass and Cofield and the folks connected to them are the only people I know using it with a really rigorous theological lens.
After Justin and I went and got trained by those guys, which was intriguing because we thought, okay, here's some pastors, some sages who have done ministry and they've been professors in theology. We trust them in a lot of ways. They're saying into their 60s and 70s now, man, if we would have had this, it would have been really helpful. So our ears perk up and we start learning stuff. Well, then we come back, we start researching things, we start, you know, finding things out on our own. And then we realize, we looked at each other one day and went, I think we got the best training out there.
You did.
On the Enneagram, because they're going to challenge you to see how each type can grow into Christ-likeness.
And they, yeah, when Rich and Jim were here with us, they were just so helpful in building out those categories of virtue and vice, or what they call sort of, it's sort of basically flesh and spirit. You know, when you're walking the flesh, what are you going to be prone to? When you're really bearing the fruit of the spirit, what beautiful things are you going to uniquely bring to the table based on sort of this temperament? Really, really helpful to give me a vision for sanctification.
It's been very helpful in marriages as well.
Yeah.
Helping spouses, just basically what it does is it gives you new language to the stuff you're already feeling anyway. It gives you a new grid to look at all the same arguments, all the same conflict, all the same interpersonal stuff that you tend to be experiencing.
Instead of jerk, I can just ask my wife to call me an eight instead. just a little softer, just a little more gentle. So, and look, here's the thing about the Enneagram. As with anything, we really want it to remain a tool. It's an open-handed thing. It's not non-negotiable. And so back to the listener's question, why do we use it at Coram Deo? Or you know, it seems like there's a lot of energy being put toward it. And the danger of that in any church is people can do immature things with it, right? It can become a typecasting sort of a tool, you know? And we don't want it to be that. But we do want it to be a tool for self-awareness. And so to the extent that we can learn to talk about, hey, here's a helpful tool to help us see ourselves more clearly, that can be a really good thing. Here's what Rich and Jim have convinced me of in the time we've spent with them, because it squares with my own experience, is that relational healthiness and wholeness is the most important aspect of leadership and probably the least emphasized aspect of leadership in the evangelical world.
Yeah, yeah.
Evangelicals have tended to emphasize theology and the intellect and competence, but been weak on relational wholeness. And for that reason, it explains why there's a lot of evangelical gospel-teaching churches where leaders are unhealthy and where people burn out and where pastors, you know, disqualify themselves, not because they don't have a good theological background, but because they're just not relationally healthy. They're not emotionally healthy. And so Rich and Jim have said, look, the Enneagram is just a tool, but it's a tool aimed at helping us become more relationally whole and emotionally healthy. And that is just a crucial need right now mm-hmm. in the church. And for that reason, any tool that helps us get some traction in that direction is a helpful tool.
Mm-hmm. And so if you're more curious about the Enneagram when it comes to you personally, and you're especially at Cormdale Church, one thing that I would emphasize is this is not the kind of test that you just want to jump online and go and take.
Because everybody's already done that. They're like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to go Enneagram.
Somebody's already Googled people. That. You can do that, but I will say this.
You're going to get what you pay for.
You will get what you pay for. And based on how the type folds out, if you're one of nine types, the way you interpret all of that information is either going to be really helpful to you or really harmful to you. And so one of the things that I think DeYoung is spot on about when he talks about this in his TGC article is he says, we need to find some experts and we need to find some people who are trained in these things because if we're going to treat it like Strength Finders or Myers-Briggs or something like that, then we actually need to put in some work to understand it. And that's one thing that I will say has been helpful and actually proven. So I really think this is true for people who come out of the test as a type one, especially if you come out as a type nine. And I think it's really helpful to have some third party influence helping you interpret, here's what this actually all means. Because it's just like anything else at first, it gets a little overwhelming and dicey. And if I'm a one, I'm looking at this thing like, oh crap, I'm a really bad version of myself. And now what? I'm doomed, you know? And that's just not the case. So
the Enneagram, here's been the helpful thing for me. It uses the language of resourceful and non-resourceful. Resourceful meaning when I'm actually living into the beauty of this type of sort of wiring and temperament. So for me, I will just out myself. You've already outed me. I'm an eight on the Enneagram, right? And so that's the challenger, or that's the person who's a little bit of a dominant personality, or likes to be a contrarian, wants to really, you know, lead. The beautiful side of that is entrepreneurship. It's mm-hmm. it's the ability to take charge, cast vision, move something forward. And so there's ways in which I see the Lord really beautifully using that. And that's the resourceful side of that wiring can do amazing things for the kingdom of God. The non-resourceful side of that is things like combative, dismissive, argumentative, right? It's like the bully, the really defensive person that wants to argue all the time. And so it helps me see how, okay, so the non-resourceful side of that is a huge detriment to leadership. Because no one wants to follow a leader who's argumentative, combative, right? And so not only does it help me understand what sanctification looks like for a person like me, but it also helps me see, okay, I think this is how the Bible actually speaks of things, right? When it says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, it's not saying, you know, some of us have these and some of us don't. It's saying, here's what the fullness of spiritual flourishing looks like in our lives. And then when it says the deeds of the flesh are this other set of things over here, it's saying you have the capacity to live in either of these worlds, right? Like when Galatians 5 says, don't sow to the flesh, but sow to the Spirit, right? Or, you know, walk not according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. What it's saying is you actually have the capacity for both of these in you. One is beautiful and God-honoring. One is very detrimental. And that's the same thing that Enneagram gives us with resourceful, non-resourceful is, I think for all of us, there are ways which our unique wiring can bear the image of God and really glorify God. There are ways which we uniquely can be marked by fleshliness and ugliness. And it's good to know the sort of specific flavor that takes. What Richard Lovelace called it, your characteristic flesh, mm-hmm. was a great term from his book, Dynamics of Spiritual Life. He said, you have a characteristic flesh. And I think that's what the Enneagram helps to hone in on is, hey, Chris has a nine. Here's what your characteristic flesh is going to look like. For me as an eight, here's what my character, when I am walking in self-dependence and self-reliance, here's what's going to tend to come out. And so as I see those things and as other people see those things, it's a helpful mirror to me to go, oh, okay, I gotta see that for what it is and repent. So I outed myself as an eight. Now you guys get to out yourselves. What number are you on the Enneagram, and what does that suggest about yourself?
Well, I'm a six, with sprinkling a little salt and pepper there with some 3 and some 8 and a non-resourceful 1. Okay,
so you're everything.
So basically, everything. No, I'm just saying if you don't understand the Enneagram, I just overwhelmed you. But basically, what I'm saying is I view the world through a white and black lens and a good or bad or ugly lens, but I'm really faithful to the end. But I will also be faithful in the non-resourceful side that you mentioned, Bob. I'll be faithful to things I shouldn't even be faithful to, meaning like if I need to get out of especially an unhealthy relationship, which I saw this in my past, probably let's say from 0 to 30, I saw this in friendships. I will not quit a friendship, but I should have quit it a year ago, if that makes sense. So I'll stay until the end. I'll be really faithful. So obviously the flip side of that is that's a good virtue to have. You play into faithfulness. You have a lot of security. You bring a lot of security to a team, especially a lot of stability to people, but also prone to anxiety. So it's said about the Enneagram of sixes that on a scale of 0 to 100, if that's the anxiety scale, I'm already at a 10. So I'm just going to go up from there, not down from there. So stuff like that was super helpful to understand with the Enneagram. So how about you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are both nines.
So yeah, 9. So we're just going to sit here and be all peacemaking and
agreeable. Yeah.
Yeah. So the 9, the peacemaker. I think the way for me that this often takes shape is like I have a pretty easygoing, laid-back personality. I'm not put off by eights, so I enjoy being in the room with eights. But one of the things for me is, I mean, nines are good at kind of reconciling different ideas and disagreements, and I love that. I love trying to synthesize and find, not necessarily compromise, but a way to bring what may seem like disparate ideas together. And so it's good to have a 9 in the room because they can, hey, what are you thinking? Hey, how can we work these things out? But at the same time, if that isn't capable in my mind, then I check out pretty quickly. Like I can go passive, I can get frustrated, discouraged, and instead of pressing through, maybe where an 8 would kind of press through and take charge, I'm like, I'm out. Peace out, backing away. I'm going to shut down. I'm going to be quiet. So if you've ever been around me and have just noticed that you lost me, probably means that I'm not able to reconcile what's going on. And so I'm done.
I can very much identify with that, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a 9. And I also had a really high 4 score and a 7 score. So I feel like...
You're very creative and happy.
And you have fun.
Well, am I happy? I'm very dramatic. Oh. I feel like I can be very dramatic, but my 9 score was the highest. And so, yeah, I've seen that play out as being pretty easygoing, but also just becoming paralyzed when I'm offered 2 different points of view and I don't know which is the best. I just back off. The other thing that's been super helpful is with learning that I'm a 9 is it explains my need for naps. I recently learned that 9s need naps to like recharge.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, this explains so much.
Fantastic.
That's where you start using the Enneagram as license. You're like, wow, sorry.
I'm a 9. Sorry, guys. Sorry. I got to take a nap.
It's probably, yeah.
It's good.
The other frustrating thing about 9s, as my wife will tell you, is we can be incredibly stubborn in the sense that if we haven't kind of come to a conclusion or if we haven't decided on something, or we decided the opposite, we're just not moving. So even though they can be very easygoing and laid back, once we've kind of landed on a decision, we ain't moving.
Yeah.
And we're slow going sometimes. So, because we haven't had a nap, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Let us have a nap and then we'll.
So basically, though, what's also helpful between you two is if you are declarative about something, Chris, so like you might get stubborn about it, but if you're actually saying, like, this is where I stand on this particular thing, that's actually you taking a stand for something. And saying, this is where I land on this, right? And so, like, all the rest of us around the rest of the Enneagram circle have to go, oh, man, Bethany just made a decision, guys. We got to stand with her in that, you know?
Yeah.
These articles, if you read them on the Gospel Coalition, or there's lots of people, again, talking and writing about the Enneagram. The critiques of the Enneagram are all right on. I mean, it's hard. Everything that people poke holes in is like, yep, that's a weakness of it, you know? And so... Kevin DeYoung particularly takes issue with this book, The Road Back to You, and just says it's a flimsy, non-gospel, non-theological book. And he's right.
Yeah, he is right.
However, and in his concluding article, he says, I'm sure that some Christians will be quick to respond, sounds like a goofy book, but that's not how I use the Enneagram. And when I read this, I was like, yep, that's what I would say, Kevin. It's just like, okay, I can throw out lots of stuff, lots of dumb things people do with the Enneagram. I still think it's a helpful and useful tool. And as if you're around our church, I know that not every listener of this podcast is part of our church, but if you're around our church, what you're going to find is we just use this as a tool for self-awareness. It is not the gospel. It is not Jesus Christ. It does not define your identity. And it's only helpful to a point, but it is helpful.
Preach.
And so because we value self-awareness, because we think it's really important for people to have a realistic sense of who they are and who they're not, we have found this a very helpful tool. Again, there are lots of dangers with it if it is divorced from a theologically sound interpretation. And if you don't have a gospel grid to lay on top of it, it can become a way to make excuses for your sin, a way to avoid sanctification because after all, this is just who I am. It's just like any personality tool. People can use it as a way of avoiding growth rather than as a way of enticing growth. And I think when it's used that way, it's used incorrectly.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We'd love to hear from our listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send us an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.